Welcome, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll delve into Donald Trump's legal actions against major media organizations and their implications for press freedom in the United States. But first, a new documentary exposes how Hungary's far-right president, Viktor Orban, has dismantled democratic rights, including the country's vibrant media outlets. The film Democracy Noir follows three women, a journalist, a politician, and a nurse, who are fighting to reclaim their country from Viktor Orban's far-right political party. Backed by vast financial resources and strategic sophistication, the party has systematically rewritten key constitutional laws to entrench one-party rule in Hungary and has taken control of the media. Many in the United States see parallels here as Donald Trump and the Republican Party are increasingly using the tools of democracy to undermine its foundations. Connie Field is an Academy Award nominated and Emmy-winning director and a pioneering social documentary filmmaker. Some of her work includes Have You Heard from Johannesburg, a seven-part series on the global movement that ended apartheid in South Africa, and the feminist classic The Life and Times of Rosie the Riveter. For listeners in the San Francisco Bay Area, her new documentary, Democracy Noir, which we'll talk about on this show, on the rise of Viktor Orban in Hungary, it will be screened on Thursday, July 17th at 7 p.m. at Rialto Cinemas in El Cerrito. You can find out more information on our website by going to klw.org, then click on News, and then Your Call. Thank you so much for joining us, Connie, and congratulations on this powerful and very timely documentary.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you on. And I want to talk about all the nuances of this film. For some time now, many observers have warned that developments in the U.S. under Donald Trump are mirroring the strategies really pioneered in many ways by Viktor Orban in Hungary, from winning elections and then using democratic institutions to consolidate that power. So this is very timely in terms of understanding perhaps what's going on here in the United States. So I wanted to start by asking, what made you decide to make this film and why did you choose Hungary?
Well, I chose Hungary because my husband is Hungarian and we've been going back to Hungary almost every year since 1990. So we've had a kind of front row seat to watch it go from a budding democracy to what it is now, which is basically an authoritarian regime. And so we really felt it was really important to get the word out about what was going on in that country, because it would have effects around the world, which it has. And there's really a direct link between Orban and what's going on in the Republican Party now. Orban created an institute called the Danube Institute. He was very involved in members of that institute in working with the Heritage Foundation and the creation of Project 2025, which is basically the ideological groundwork under which Trump is operating at this time. So I think it's very relevant to what's going on here now.
Absolutely. Well, there's so much that seems to parallel it. Can you talk about parallel what's happening in the United States? Can you talk about how Orban was able to consolidate his power so effectively? How long did it take for him to put these far-right policies in place?
Well, first of all, the kind of culprit in this entire story is actually the Hungarian constitution. Okay, it basically, and I have no idea why the people who wrote this at the, you know, in 1990 came up with this, but in the Constitution, it says if a political party gains two-thirds majority in parliament, they can change the Constitution. And Orban in 2010 was the first one to gain two-thirds majority. And in 2011, he completely changed the Constitution. So the entire groundwork was done very, very quickly that would give him continual power. He took over the court, much as the right has taken over our Supreme Court. And he enacted a lot of laws in it that gave him total power over how elections were run. And all of this has created a groundwork for him to continue his power. He moves a lot slower into terms of instituting some things. Trump and the Republicans are moving very, very quickly. And this is really why it happened. You know, much the same way, I mean, I think what the Trump presidency has done for a lot of Americans is also let us understand the way our Constitution actually limits our democracy. Okay, the Senate is really not democratic. the Electoral College is not democratic. A lot of these things allow for minority rule in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so many of the issues that he ran on to initially win democratically are so similar to the issues that animate the right wing here in the United States. He used anti-immigrant rhetoric to promote a nationalist and racist agenda. He has pushed anti-LGBTQ, anti-trans laws. Can you talk about his appeal, at least at the outset and perhaps to this day, running on these types of issues in Hungary specifically?
Well, I think as we Americans have noticed how effectively Trump has weaponized immigration. Okay, and the reality is, in terms of immigration, we don't nearly have any of the problems that Europe does. I mean, our country is made and built by immigrants. There's different ways to handle it. But part of the way that these authoritarians operate is you have to have a boogeyman to blame. And then you as the leader will come in and you're going to save the country and the people. And it actually is very effective. It's what Orban did. Orban built a wall in 2015, and Trump is calling build the wall in 2016. I mean, it's like parrot talk. He just mimics what Orban has done. And so this makes creates a situation in which he's going to save you. Orban did the same thing in Hungary, whereas in Hungary, immigration was really nothing. The people who were like leaving Syria in 2015 were using Hungary as a transit route to get up to the rest of Europe. And none of them wanted to stay in Hungary. But yet Orban made this into a big enemy. He made the EU into a big enemy. He made George Soros into a big enemy. And he was going to save his people. And once his forces took over all the media in the country, except for Budapest, he was then able to just hear. He's also done a couple of things that have been very effective. One is he came up with a family program that's been very, very popular in Hungary, where if she's exempt from income tax for the rest of her life. It does actually support Hungarian families, but only middle-class families because it's based only on your income. Mm-hmm. He did not want to support the Roma population, which is too poor to take any advantage of his family policy. So that's been very effective. And also what I show in the film, the irony, is the fact that the EU has been fighting Orban, but it's also been, you know, unwittingly supporting him completely through the grants that the EU gives to Hungary. And Orban has been able to, with that money, actually build his own oligarchy. It's not like our country where we have an oligarchy first and it kind of controls our politics. He, like Putin did, actually built an oligarchy that's completely loyal to him on EU money that was used a lot in construction. And some of that construction actually did benefit his population in the countryside.
We're speaking with Connie Field, Academy Award nominated, Emmy winning director of the new film Democracy Noir, which covers the rise of Viktor Orban in Hungary. And Connie, in terms of the issues that had appeal, we talked about the parallels between the, you know, far right in the United States, some of the issues on nationalism, anti-immigration, and anti-trans rights and anti-LGBTQ. Is there something going on in Hungary that mirrors the United States in terms of what's going on with these rural areas in Hungary that have so much support for Orban, similarly to how so many rural areas in the United States support Trump? I mean, what are the sort of economic and cultural conditions that make these, you know, very sort of exclusionary, you know, hateful types of policies so appealing at this moment in history in Hungary?
Well, one of the things that goes on in Hungary, which doesn't really go on here, is that in these smaller towns around the country, many people work for the local government, and the local government is Fidesz, which is Orban's party. They really can't vote against it without losing their jobs. Okay, so there's a lot of that pressure that goes on. And it just like this country, look, a lot of countries divided in terms of what news you watch. And so if you're only watching Fox News, which is what goes on with Trump supporters, that's the perspective you see. And you don't bother looking at anybody else's perspective, nor do you believe it. And so that's very similar to Hungary in that the news that they receive is all, you know, Orban news. And so in that sense, it's kind of very similar to what is going on here.
Is there a similarity in the economic conditions? I mean, I think in the United States about how people who don't have a college degree have had stagnant wages for, you know, essentially 45 years now, while prices have increased, leading to a lot of these, you know, structural inequalities. And I'm just curious if that same dynamic might be happening in Hungary.
No, it's not. I don't think it's exactly that in Hungary. I mean, part of what went on in Hungary is there was a very corrupt socialist government before Orban came into power this time. And also, unfortunately for them, they were steering the country during 2008 when the entire world was kind of sinking economically, as you remember. So that affected the people's viewpoint of the opposition. That's been what's given it was Orban was someone who was going to come in and change that. So it's a different dynamic than is going on exactly in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, and let's talk about the opposition. And you follow three women, as I mentioned in the introduction, including a award-winning TV journalist who lost her job after Orban shut down her station. So Orban has taken control of over 400 media outlets, using them to spread his propaganda. And there's a scene in which the staff of the country's largest newspaper shows up. Then this paper reported on corruption scandals on a near daily basis. They all show up to work and find that the doors are locked. They all lost their jobs. So what does independent media look like in Hungary today? Where do people get their news from?
Well, Budapest is actually really kind of a different country than the rest of Hungary. And it's the opposition succeeded in 2019 of winning the mayorship of Budapest, which has been extremely significant. And there's a lot of the news organizations did is they migrated to the internet. And there's a whole plethora of what I consider basically unbiased news that is available to people in Budapest on the internet. It's also available to people in the rest of the country, but the internet is not quite as strong, especially in the rural communities. And also in those communities, they're most likely to get their news from television and are not as hooked into the internet. So there is a lot of opposition news. There's a lot of truth telling around Budapest, but it doesn't reach the rest of the country, which is the problem. But one thing that's really important, I think, with this story that I'm telling about Hungary is that the resistance always continued, always, over all these 12 years that Orban has been in power. And people have never given up. And one of the things, lessons learned here, is the importance of demonstrating. Not for you to necessarily change, you know, the opinion of the ruling party to your side, which, you know, it we're not going to convince Trump by going out into the streets. But what we do is build community for ourselves, which is crucial. It's really crucial in terms of resisting what we have to resist now. And so they show us it's very important to get out into the streets. And when there is a place to move, okay, which there was, like in 2019, when a coalition was formed by all the opposing parties and elected the mayor of Budapest, that election has been really crucial. What's happened just recently, and this is kind of amazing, Orbán banned Pride in Hungary. He banned it. It's against the law to demonstrate for Pride. Yet 200,000 people in Budapest participated in Pride this year against Orbán's law, and so they succeeded.
Some potential cracks in the facade, and I think such a powerful lesson for people in resistance movements. I just want to let listeners know, if you're just joining us, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We're talking to Connie Field, Academy Award-nominated, Emmy-winning director and pioneering social documentary filmmaker. We're talking about her film Democracy Noir, which covers the rise of Viktor Orbán in Hungary and the parallels with what's happening in here in the United States. The phone lines are now open. If you've been to Hungary, have been following what's happening in Hungary, or have questions about what's going on in Hungary and what those lessons might be for us here in the United States, you could join the conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email your questions or comments to yourcall@kalw.org. And Connie, as we're talking about the resistance to Orbán and some of the electoral success they've had at the municipal level, is there a chance that they could win a national election again, despite the odds being stacked against them? I mean, is there the possibility that they could put together an agenda that might appeal to some of those Orbán voters that are otherwise really just inundated by the control over the media outlet? Or are the structural conditions so stacked against them now that there isn't much hope of that in the near term?
No, in fact, there's hope on the horizon. A new party was formed that grew out of a small party that was in the countryside, who is being headed by a man named Peter Magyar, who quit Fidesz. Okay, so this party, like, for instance, there was there's a big national holiday, and Orbán always has rallies at that day, and so did the opposition, and the opposition's rally was bigger than Orbán's. So it's really actually threatening him right now, and there is hope. So we will see what happens in the elections. They're having elections the same time we are, except it's in the spring of 2026, and we're in the fall. And, you know, there is hope. There is hope.
Well, it's very encouraging, and we'll have to follow those elections. I know you will be, of course. Has his base of support eroded? I mean, beyond just the opposition, you know, forming this coalition, this new party, do you have a sense that people in Hungary are starting to tire of Orbán's policies?
Well, things are also getting harder in Hungary economically right now. Okay, I mean, food prices have shot up. What Orbán did, and let's, you know, watch out for this in terms of Trump, is that he lowered income taxes and raised sales taxes. Sales taxes in Hungary are almost 30%. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And that affects, you know, the people who don't have a lot of money, because we all have to buy things. Mm-hmm. So things are not, you know, going very well economically in Hungary now, and that's going to have a big effect.
Yeah, interesting potential lesson there for the United States if things take a turn for the worse economically here. We had an off-air caller who has a friend who's African-American who married a Hungarian and moved to Budapest. And the question is, are Black people in danger in Hungary like Roma people are, as you referenced earlier?
No, because there's very few in Hungary. I mean, Hungary doesn't have a lot of immigrants from other countries, not like the rest of Europe. And so really, as the caller said, it's really the Roma who suffer in Hungary, but they suffer in the same way that Roma suffer all over Europe.
Yeah.
It's not distinctly any different in Hungary than it is everywhere in terms of the Roma.
Well, I guess that's perhaps somewhat reassuring, relatively so. But appreciate your take on that question and the caller for asking it. And since it's our media roundtable show, I have to ask you. You talk in the film about how Orban is able to control 400 media outlets. How is it that he was able to garner that control over so many media outlets while the opposition is not really able to get it airtime?
Because he, in creating his oligarchs, okay, they have discretionary money and they buy up the media. Okay, that's what's happened. Mm-hmm. Basically, people in the higher, economic rattle who support Orban have been part of his entourage, really, and they're the ones who bought up a lot of the media, like I show in the film.
Okay, appreciate then. I think maybe we've seen some examples of that, not exactly, but certainly the sort of billionaire control over our major media outlets in the United States. I think there potentially are some parallels there, as we will talk about in our next segment on the show, some of the legal settlements as well. Well, as we think about the rise of Orban as a parallel to what's happening in the United States, there are some real direct connections. You have some amazing footage of the CPAC, the conservative conference normally held in the United States, actually is held in Hungary. Orban is invited as a speaker to obviously to that one, but then also the one that was held here in the United States. A lot of parallels with that. Can you talk about how the conservatives in the United States, the far right in the United States, are really developing these very close ties with Orban and his party?
Yeah, this has been going on for a number of years. And as I mentioned, the Danube Institute, where a lot of, American intellectual right-wing people have gone to. And one thing that's very interesting is Orban is really kind of an ideologue, all right? He's created an entire ideology of this vision, nationalistic, white-based vision of the world. And so people from our country who are also into that vision have migrated and mixed with the Hungarian intellectuals. And, this is growing. This is growing. And the connection between Orban and the U.S. right wing and the European right wing is also growing.
That's definitely an interesting sort of new axis forming internationally here. Well, we just have a minute or two left here. I have to ask you, what's next for you, either with this film or for upcoming projects, or just in terms of what you're following with what's going on in Hungary?
Well, what's next really is getting this film out, and it's going to open in theaters in September around the country. And so that's really what I'm focused on now is getting this film out in America. It's done very well in Europe. It's been in festivals all over Europe. It's been on television all over Europe. It's been harder to let this find a home in the United States, but I think we're certainly doing that. And now I think it's so much easier for people to see, it's a mirror to what's happening to us here in the United States.
Absolutely. Well, such a powerful
And the bulk of this story, which is really important, is the resistance.
Yes.
So it's something that gives me encouragement, and I want to share that with people here because that's incredibly important here now.
Absolutely. For anyone involved in the resistance against Trump, against the far right in the United States, the lessons there, I think, are very powerful and very inspiring to see the people you feature and their resilience. So it's really a powerful film. I just want to congratulate you again for making it and remind listeners that you can see it here in the San Francisco Bay Area on Thursday, July 17th at 7 o'clock at Rialto Cinemas in El Cerrito. More information is on our website at kalw.org. Just click on news and then you can find our program, Your Call, there. Connie Field, Academy Award nominated, Emmy winning director of Democracy Noir. Thank you so much for making the film and for talking about it here today on Your Call's Media Roundtable.
And thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, coming up next, we'll talk about the Paramount settlement with Trump, $16 million over an interview that Kamala Harris gave on 60 Minutes during the campaign. So stay with us. We'll be back just after this short break.